I'm Dream Queen. Thanks for joining in the cab back in the book club. A Knock at Midnight, edited by Claiborne Carson and Peter Hollerin. Inspiration from the great sermons of Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. All right, y'all. This sermon is called Unfulfilled Dreams. And I'm going to read a couple of paragraphs from the introduction, which was written by Dr. Vincent Harding. At the time of this writing, Dr. Vincent Harding was a former executive director of the King Center, has been a professor at the Iliff School of Theology in Denver for 15 years, and co-chairperson of the Gandhi Hamer King Center for the Study of Religion and Democratic Renewal at Iliff. He has authored several books, including Martin Luther King, The Inconvenient Hero, and There is a River, The Inconvenient Hero. I'm going to have to look for that one. So Dr. Vincent Harding opens his introduction with this paragraph. The time is important. Late in the winter of 1968, just a month before the assassin's relentless, long-traveling bullet finally found him, approaching the darkness, living in the shadow, perhaps anticipating the elusive, eternal light, our brother needed to share these words of self-reflection, confession, and hope. Where better than at Ebenezer, where the congregation that had known him before he knew himself, the extended family of faith whose love could provide a space for their internationally renowned son to come home and say things that only a compassionate family could receive. He lectured and preached to others all over the world about magnificent dreams and even nightmares, but only at home did he find deep permission to share the soul-piercing reality of his most personal, unfulfilled dreams. King grew up in the church. His father, as we've talked on this show, his father's father, his brothers, great-grandfather, all ministers. Ebenezer Baptist Church is Dr. King's home outside of his house. Is where he first preached and is where he became truly in his power. Vincent Harding goes on to say, and yet, even especially at home, he found it difficult to share explicitly what was really in his heart. Was it just about being 38 years old and realizing that he would probably never finish the work he had set out to do a decade earlier? The work of redeeming the soul of America. The work of freeing black and white people, rich and poor people, to become their best, compassionate, courageous, democracy-loving selves. Was that what he wanted to say, to share with all the loving elders, all the young folks and family members in the choir? Was that what he wanted to say to Daddy behind him in the pulpit, to Mama at the organ? Clearly, he needed to say something to this community of love about the schizophrenia in his soul, about the civil war going on in his heart, about his own life's troubling connection to the poet's words, I see and approve the better things of life, but the evil things I do. He needed to confess how deeply he had failed himself and his own best possibilities, not only in the great public arena, where everyone could see his magnificent efforts at building temples of righteousness, justice, and peace, where everyone could see the implacable opposition and the shadow of death that seemed to envelop him. We've read on this show all about love, New Visions from Bell Hooks. It started the book club. And I realize in reading All About Love how much she's drawn from Reverend King's sermons. And it's so important to have loving community. In these times right now, we are going at each other's throats. We really are. Everybody thinks they're right. A lot of people think they have the answer, or that no answer is the right answer. And we have to be careful because our community ties can become strained. On a regular Monday, we can be very, very strained. And as we approach the elections in the coming weeks, this November, as tensions are rising and we're all looking at things from our own lens, it's important to be reminded that it is the most important thing to have community, whether near or far community. So your emotional and spiritual community can be thousands of miles away or right here in your village, in your neighborhood, you know. It's important to have your family can be far away, whoever you consider your family, personal chosen people, your blood family you might be lucky enough to be really tight with. Whatever you choose, I use the word family for my friend family. And we have to maintain a space for each other to be honest, kind, not judged, and really have our hearts be seen. That our hearts, what's in our heart is the most important thing. Oftentimes our actions don't match our words. We don't understand where people are coming from and things can be taken personally. The words that are said on the internet, especially, we come from places of passion, and within our hearts lie passion. But let's be forgiving. Forgiveness lives there. And if we assume that the ones that we've known, the ones who have shown us, that we assume the best of them, that the heart is in the right place, even if we don't understand where the logic is necessarily. And we have time. We have time to breathe. And we have time to reflect and step back and say, you know what, homie, I'm going to get back to you on that one. I love you. And I'm going to get back to you on this. And we lower the temperature. You hear me, little queen trash mouth? We're going to lower the temperature. We're going to tamp down the rhetoric. Oh, boy. I'm glad y'all are still out there because I needed to bring it back here for a second. Go over to YouTube. Go over to Mixcloud. These are free clicks. And you can listen to All About Love and our discussions on the Mixcloud channel. It's the archives are there. I haven't made it to YouTube yet. That came a little later, but it's if you want our discussion and our rundown, it's really beautiful how our community is coming together around that. All right, so I'm going to go ahead and read from Unfulfilled Dreams, and we're going to do it the way that I did it. A little bit in the beginning. I got my Bible here. Y'all can get tired of me if you want. It's really interesting, this time, the times that we live in, and where we're at with this chapter, where we're at with what's going on in the Middle East and our country and Gaza and Iran and all of these other countries over there, because this the passage that Dr. King chose to be the inspiration for this sermon is from 1 Kings chapter 8. And y'all know we're unpacking religion. We're decolonizing our spirits here on this show as part of the work that I'm doing. And so I'm not coming to you as a Christian minister or anyone like that. I'm coming to you as a descendant of said such, but not where my faith lies. Okay. However, it is where Dr. King operated from. And as we talked about the last time we hit up the book club, Dr. King in the sermon, I think it's the drum major instinct. He's like, that's all I'm a preacher. I'm not a politician. I don't want to be a politician. I'm a preacher. So the Bible is part of his teachings. I mean, if we're going to study him, we're going to have to look at a little piece. Now, this whole chapter of Kings I didn't really read the whole thing. I got up from chapter 8 where he, 1 Kings chapter 8 where he pulls from, and I go all the way up to about verse 20. In his sermon, he didn't say which verse he was reading from, so I had to read as far until I got to where he was quoting. He's quoting 1 Kings 8, 18. But I was getting there. This is the whole thing about Solomon and the Ark of the Covenant and David and Israel and what God said and you know, who's going to build the kingdom. And, you know, if y'all are hip and have been listening to this show and a couple of others that I've been on with my friends, as we're unpacking what's going on in Israel and the Christian right nationalism that's taking over the government of America, is no longer a fringe thing, but is trying to be used by corporations, namely Elon Musk using his influence, but other people as well, to empower the evangelical movement to be bigger and bigger and bigger in politics. I'm not here to talk about where this all started, but we can look at Pat Robertson and all of these people from the 70s and 80s that got involved in politics, and it really took a sharp turn right, okay? And these people are overall anti-Semitic, okay? Let's just be real about it. There's a lot of evangelicals that are ready to egg on this war because they think that this is what's going to bring the second coming of Jesus. And it all has to do, I think, if we're digging into this, David and Solomon and Israel and what God said, okay? But we're not going to talk all about that. But I stumbled upon quite a bit of it getting to this. But in Kings chapter 8, verse 18, Solomon is talking. And he says, "But the Lord said to my father David, because it was in your heart to build a house for my name, you did well that it was in your heart." And that's where we're coming back to the meat of today. On page 191 of A Knock at Midnight, Dr. King begins, "I want to preach this morning from the subject unfulfilled dreams. Unfulfilled dreams. My text is taken from the 8th chapter of 1 Kings. Sometimes it's overlooked. It is not one of the most familiar passages in the Old Testament, but I never will forget when I first came across it. It struck me as a passage having cosmic significance because it says so much in so few words about things that we all experience in life. David, as you know, was a great king, and the one thing that was foremost in David's mind and in his heart was to build a great temple. The building of the temple was considered to be the most significant thing facing the Hebrew people, and the king was expected to bring this into being. David had the desire. He started." And then we come to that passage over in the 8th chapter of 1 Kings, which reads, "And it was in the heart of David, my father, to build an house for the name of the Lord God of Israel. And the Lord said unto David, my father, whereas it was in thine heart to build a house unto my name, thou didst well that it was within thine heart." And that's really what I want to talk about this morning. It is well that it was within thine heart, as if to say, David, you will not be able to finish the temple. You will not be able to build it. But I just want to bless you because it was within thine heart. Your dream will not be fulfilled. The majestic hopes that guided your days will not be carried out in terms of an actual temple coming into being that you were able to build. But I bless you, David, because it was within thine heart. You had the desire to do it. You had the intention to do it. You tried to do it. You started to do it. And I bless you for having the desire and the intention in your heart. It is well that it was within thine heart. So many of us in life start out building temples, temples of character, temples of justice, temples of peace. And so often we don't finish them because life is like Schubert's unfinished symphony. At so many points we start, we try, we set out to build our various temples. And I guess one of the great agonies of life is that we are constantly trying to finish that which is unfinishable. We are commanded to do that. And so we, like David, find ourselves in so many instances having to face the fact that our dreams are not fulfilled. What a downer, Dr. King. You know, like, who likes to go out and have somebody that you look up to and, you know, who seems to be achieving so much on the world stage and making so many strides to progress and changing hearts and minds and blowing open people's beings and letting that light shine, and have that person tell you that you probably ain't going to get there. The seeds that you plant today, you may never see sprout. Why try? What's the point? You know, why practice self-control or self-awareness or compassion? You know, if I don't feel like it, I'm just going to die anyway. And what's going to happen on this planet after me doesn't affect me. And if I don't believe in an afterlife or reincarnation, then it really doesn't affect me. I'm just going to do what I'm going to do, wallow in the garden, and peace out. Why spend my day striving? It's interesting. I've heard Dr. King talk about this before, and, you know, I just want to boo him. You know, when he's talking about it in another sermon, if everybody can't meet their highest goals, you know, sometimes you just fall short in life. And one part that stands out in my mind where he's like, if you're going to, oh, wow, this is spirit right here. I was thinking and I just kind of flipped the book and it came right to the chapter. It's from the three dimensions of a complete life. And I don't remember what week we studied this. Got a lot of notes on it. But he says, what I'm saying to you this morning, my friends, is even if it falls your lot to be a street sweeper, go on out and sweep the streets like Michelangelo painted pictures. Sweep streets like Handel and Beethoven composed music. Sweep streets like Shakespeare wrote poetry. Sweep streets so well that all the hosts of heaven and earth will have to pause and say, here lived a great street sweeper who swept his job well. And I'll tell you, sometimes I'm out here doing the dirty work on the side of the road. You know, beautiful artwork that I gave a commission to paint on people's homes, and I feel hot and I feel tired, and I think I am very blessed to have an opportunity to work on my own time with beautiful, wonderful people. And I'm very lucky in life to have what meager things I do have and what strong community I have. But I want to be this other thing. And it's very discouraging to think that that may never happen. You know, to want to give up the efforts to cut back the workload. And I think about Dr. King and I'm like, Dr. King, am I just going to have to be the best house painter that I'm ever going to be so that the hosts of heaven can look upon me and smile and say, hey, can you paint our soffits? I'm like, that's cool, Jesus. I can't. I mean, if I fall, I guess I'm already dead. Yeah, but it's all right, you know, because it really is where your heart's at, you know, standing up there, just working with the community and living and loving. And it really, It's the little things that we do. It really is. And it's what's in our hearts. And King goes on to talk about just a litany of leaders. Say that 10 times fast. Litany of leaders in this literary lashing that on life. He goes to talk about Mahatma Gandhi, how Mahatma Gandhi labored for years and years for the independence of his people. And through a powerful nonviolent revolution, he was able to win that independence. For years, the Indian people had been dominated politically, exploited economically, segregated, and humiliated by foreign powers, and Gandhi struggled against it. He struggled to unite his own people, and nothing was greater in his mind than to have India's one great united country moving toward a higher destiny. And that was his dream. But Gandhi had to face the fact that he was assassinated and died with a broken heart because that nation that he wanted to unite ended up being divided between India and Pakistan as a result of the conflict between the Hindus and the Muslims. Life is a long, continual story of setting out to build a great temple and not being able to finish it. Okay. This is a harsh reality that often elders tell the youth, right? Do what you're gonna do. We can't be attached to the results. When you get older, you'll go and you'll see. And time tells, because that's it. Look at India right now. Good God. I don't even know what Mahatma Gandhi would say. I mean, and that's the thing. What would we say to him right now? When we look at the views that we find out that he had about the so quote unquote undesirables and things. You know, the plight of women there being assaulted in the streets and the feminist movement coming up there of women trying to regain their power. There's a lot, the assassinations and the Hindu government being really nationalist. And we have to take the whole of Gandhi's own life. I really can't tell you right now off the top of my head how old he was when he was assassinated. I mean, I got the thing opening right now, but it's not the point because we know he was old. You know, you can look at the pictures and see how old he was. And he worked his entire life to see this, or, you know, most of his adult life. And we're still looking at it. It's just not perfect. So what are we trying to do here in America? Lil Queen Trash Mouth. It's okay. You can still text me, even though it's going to go off in the studio. It don't matter. People are cool with it. They know we're a team. And I'm my homie Hot Diggity out there, you know. And we get together and put our minds and hearts together. And it could get a little frustrating. And it's just like, okay, what are we looking for in results? People come up to us after the shows and they say, what can we do? What is the timeline here? And we should send this out to Richard. You know who you are. You know which Richard you are. Every time I see you and you see us and you try to bring us back to real time and the heart, is we get so focused on our tunnel vision and on results. Because like we discussed, we ain't that old yet. I think we're still learning. We're still learning how much time stuff really takes and what we could expect in our lifetime. And that's assassinations aside. That's jail sentences aside. I mean, it's just living a normal life. You know, you just don't know what you're ever going to accomplish. So don't be attached to results. Maybe that's what King is trying to say, is just walk and don't be attached to results. Anyway, all right, let's see. I'm not going to go down about him talking about Woodrow Wilson and blah, blah, blah. It was really a bummer. Let's go over to page 194. And each of you this morning in some way is building some kind of temple. The struggle is always there. It gets discouraging sometimes. It gets very disenchanting sometimes. Some of us are trying to build a temple of peace. We speak out against war. We protest. But it seems that your head is going against a concrete wall. It seems to mean nothing. And so often as you set out to build the temple of peace, you are left lonesome, you are left discouraged, and you are left bewildered. Whew, you left wanting to cry on the radio. Hey now, not going to do it, because that's when you call a friend. That's when we strengthen those community ties, okay? So when you find a project, when you find a movie, when you go get a hug and send out a text, you know, there's a ton of emojis out there, you know. But these feelings are real. And when you feel these feelings, I'm saying this for me, and maybe you'll get something out of it too, listeners. When you feel those feelings, acknowledge them. Hold them tenderly, you know. Like, I'm having a lesson right now in life about validating my own squishy feelings. It is okay. It's a factor of these meat suits that we live in, that they run on connection. There's no point in existing on this planet if you don't have connection. And when capitalism uses the philosophy of individualism to tell us that we're needy, that we want too much, that we should not need other people or want other people or depend on other people, that's a trauma. That's a trauma teaching, okay? And many of us who've been let down in life, we live in that place because we have a trauma response to that experience. It doesn't make you more of a badass to be lonesome. It doesn't make you, you know, more efficient always. Yes. And if you have your right team, if you have your finer tribe, these people, these beings that you resonate with, you know who they are. Then it makes us all stronger. And we're stronger when we're on our own, when we realize that our community has our back. Like, you don't have to be, I don't need Hot Diggity and Lil' Queen Trash Mouth. I don't need them all right here, right now in my space to feel the power of our connection. You see what I'm saying? But these other feelings are real. And it's all right to feel them and reach out and get your balm. Because we're not meant to be alone. Dr. King continues and says, now let me bring out another point. Whenever you set out to build a creative temple, whatever it may be, you must face the fact that there is a tension at the heart of the universe between good and evil. It's there. A tension at the heart of the universe between good and evil. Hinduism refers to this as a struggle between illusion and reality. Platonic philosophy used to refer to it as a tension between body and soul. Zoroastrianism, a religion of old, used to refer to it as a tension between the god of light and the god of darkness. Traditional Judaism and Christianity refer to it as a tension between God and Satan. Whatever you call it, there is a struggle in the universe between good and evil. Now, not only is that struggle structured out somewhere in the external forces of the universe, it's structured in our own lives. Psychologists have tried to grapple with it in their way, and so they say various things. Sigmund Freud used to say that this tension is a tension between what he called the id and the superego. But you know, some of us feel that it's a tension between God and man. And every one of us this morning, there's a war going on. It's a civil war. I don't care who you are. I don't care where you live. there is a civil war going on in your life. And every time you set out to be good, there's something pulling you, telling you to be evil, is going on in your life. Every time you set out to love, something keeps pulling on you, trying to get you to hate. King goes on with this. And later in this passage, on page 196, he says, "We end up having to agree with Plato that the human personality is like a charioteer with two headstrong horses, each wanting to go in different directions. There is a tension at the heart of human nature, and whenever we set out to dream our dreams and to build our temples, we must be honest enough to recognize it." And this brings me to the basic points of the text. In the final analysis, God does not judge us by the separate incidents or the separate mistakes that we make, but by the total bent of our lives. In the final analysis, God knows that his children are weak and they are frail. In the final analysis, what God requires is that your heart is right. Salvation isn't reaching the destination of absolute morality, but it's being in the process and on the right road. And then he goes on to talk really in a basic analogy, something as simple as being on Highway 80, walking it from Selma to Montgomery. And what it really, if you have a destination, you have to make sure that you're on the right road. And that's all that matters. You'll get there eventually, or you may perish on the way, but you're on the road. It's a lot. We all make that choice. We all have to make that choice. Feel the feelings. Feel the feelings. And unless you're going to go all the way through with it, and you know what I'm talking about, many of us have been at that brink before. I've talked about it on this show. Unless you're going to take it all the way there, you better grab your collar and yank yourself back, and you get a homie to clip your rock climbing belt to, whatever they call those things, your harness. That's why you need a strong tribe. That's why we don't have time for nonsense and BS. We have time for forgiveness. We have time to look at where your heart is at. We have time for our homies to see where our hearts are at. And we have time to take a pause and a breath and to shake it off. But when you know that your person is steadfast, that you can clip your harness to them, might not look the same. Maybe you can't clip your harness there to borrow some money. Maybe you can clip your harness there to hold a shoulder, you know? Maybe you can clip your harness there so we don't throw each other away. We are God. The same forgiveness that we look for on the outside and we pray for across that dimensional prayers, it's crossing the dimension within ourselves and the dimensions between us, the energetic barriers that we have. That same grace exists within us and we give it to each other. Feel the feelings. Be upset. Be hurt. But don't give up. Okay? Don't give up. Now, let's see. We're going to pass Dr. King's travels on the highways of life. Dr. King begins to close. It's a short sermon. And he talks about how he wants to be remembered. "I don't know this morning about you, but I can make a testimony. You don't need to go out this morning saying that Martin Luther King is a saint. Oh no, I want you to know this morning that I am a sinner, like all of God's children. But I want to be a good man. And I want to hear a voice saying to me one day, 'I take you in and I bless you because you try. It is well that it is within thine heart.'" What's in your heart this morning? If you get your heart right. "Oh, this morning if I can leave anything with you, let me urge you to be sure that you have a strong boat of faith. The winds are going to blow. The storms of disappointment are coming. The agonies and the anguishes of life are coming. And be sure that your boat is strong, and also be very sure that you have an anchor. In times like these, you need an anchor, and be very sure that your anchor holds. Now, he was talking just like I was talking about the harness. See, I didn't even remember that. I only read this once last night, and I had this squared out, but that's it. King goes on, it will be dark sometimes, and it will be dismal and trying, and tribulations will come. But if you have faith in the God that I'm talking about this morning, it doesn't matter, for you can stand up amid the storms. And I say it to you out of experience this morning that I've seen the lightning flash. I've heard the thunder roll. I've felt sin breakers dashing, trying to conquer my soul. But I heard the voice of Jesus saying still to fight on. He promised never to leave me, never to leave me alone. And when you get this faith, you can walk with your feet solid to the ground and your head to the air, and you fear no man. And you fear nothing that comes before you, because you know that God is even in Crete. If you ascend to the heavens, God is there. If you descend to hell, God is even there. If you take the wings of the morning and fly out to the uttermost parts of the sea, even God is there. Everywhere we turn, we find him. We can never escape him. Okay, that's the end of this sermon. And I'm going to say we can never escape him because he is within us. He, she, they, source. It's all the same. And I appreciate how King pulls it all out to say, whatever philosopher that, this therapist that, this psychoanalyst that, whatever you call that, wherever you find your seed of hope and faith and fire and passion for justice, you carry that light with you. And it's always there. And you know it from the way you've lived your life. You know it from experience.